Penn Morning Show here. Brent Gunning, Sam McKee, alongside me, for sure. Definitely alongside me here. Might be hearing him trundle into the studio as we speak. He's so graceful. Grace of an elephant, pal. Yeah, it's a great song. Fast Car, Tracy Chapman. They always remind us, podcast doesn't get that.
Oh, crap.
Yeah, it's okay. Hey, little color, just providing a little update for everybody. Again, a little later on in the hour, going to give you winners and losers from the weekend. A lot of golf featured there. And you like to read the negative ones. I like to read the positive one. It's like an extra hour golf show from Rob in Stouffville. So he's happy, unlike that other guy whose name I've already forgot.
Sour that we're talking too much golf.
A lot of people upset. Yeah, guys, we're going to talk Chase, okay? Jeff Blair coming on. He's going to give us Chase.
But they're not. He's not in the car right this minute, though.
It's okay. It's okay. Something tells me if you are in need of a Blue Jays opinion, you'll be able to get one today, even from us later on.
Does Stanley have a Blue Jays opinion?
I don't know. Maybe I'm as good a thing to ask him as any. Always love throwing him a curveball. He always gets a touch skittery when I ask about wine on the radio. So let's see what happens when I ask about the Blue Jays. Welcome in, Adam Stanley. Stanimal, how's it going, bud?
Apparently, Nick Taylor is going to be throwing out the first pitch at the Jays game on July 31st. That is what I've heard. So that's my best Blue Jays take for right now.
That's a Stanley Jays crossover.
That is so good. That is Stanley X Jays right there. Very, very much what we like to see. Exciting weekend in the world of golf. We had the Barbasol, which I'm not going to talk to you about, but we did have the Genesis Scottish Open. Across the pond, great tune-up. I just want to start talking to you about the kind of place that this tournament holds now. You know, it's been a few years that it's been co-sanctioned by the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour. And, you know, I was thinking that this is kind of how I would like the game of golf to continue to grow. I love the idea that a national open has this importance in the game. And I know part of it is because it's a great tune-up for the Open Championship. The guys are all over there. But, you know, I think about how awesome it is when we get a great field at the RBC Canadian Open. Guys will go down and play the Australian Masters from time to time. And this week in particular gives me a little window into just what a great version of a global game of golf looks like.
Yeah, 100%. I think, like, for all the conversation about what the lay of the land is going to look like on men's professional golf moving forward, like, if you zoom out and you realize that the best players in the world are going to play against each other more often and potentially on this kind of global scale where you do have, you know, guys like Rory, you know, trying to win national opens all around the world, like it's a good thing. And I think that the Scottish Open has kind of found its place as a unique tune-up for the Open Championship. I think, you know, a lot of people don't really love this golf course, but it is clearly kind of, it's a linksy style golf course. It works for the setup. It's linksy enough that the guys kind of get the professional tune-up that they need for the Open. And then obviously after a couple of years of kind of stinkers at this event, we got kind of an all-timer. I mean, big shot Bob, Rob McIntyre, with the chance to win the Scottish Open as a Scot, kind of on home soil and pull off the Nick Taylor win, was kind of spoiled by Rory. And I tweeted this yesterday, but maybe that's all Rory needed to do was become the villain finally in order to win and get the putts to fall for him. So yeah, all that being said, you know, an excellent tune-up for the Open, the national opens, whatever they may be and wherever they may be contested, always kind of hold a more special place in the hearts of the best in the world. And I obviously, what more can you say about yesterday's finish? It was spectacular.
Yeah, kudos to Big Shot Bob. He went out there and put up a number that Rory had to go chase, and it was sputtery for him. You know, he had his stops and starts. I couldn't believe I was, but I was up early watching him at 4:30 when he was off, and, you know, it wasn't the blistering pace he'd got off to elsewhere in the tournament, but, you know, we've all seen the shot that now, that kind of low iron that he slings in there, hits to 10 feet, makes the putt, and, you know, Rory is such an emotional athlete. He's such an emotional golfer, and sometimes that can get the best of him, but sometimes it can also spurn you on. You know, McKee asked me this heading into the weekend. Did you want Rory to win? And I said, well, with two rounds of golf left, no. I think I'd just like him to have a solid weekend. But how can I not feel better about his chances after watching everything on Sunday?
Because it's hard to win 2 weeks in a row.
Oh, I know.
If I'm a Rory fan, I wish he had lost that. It's winning the Valero before the Masters or winning the par 3 contest. You can't win the tourney before the tourney to win. It's tough.
It is. It's super tough. And I think the unique thing, too, for how Rory ended up winning is that the putts that hadn't fallen at basically all of the majors over the last, you know, half decade or so, you know, the putts that shouldn't have gone in finally kind of went in for him. And he kind of shrugged his shoulders or he looked up at the sky and thought, oh, wow, well, this is what this is like. So, yeah, it's like, dude, save a few for next. Like, you can still do this next week, too, maybe. But I think, like, I don't know where I read, and I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that Phil was the last guy to win kind of the Scottish and then the Open double. But Rory, I think, won the week before that he won his Open at Hoylake as well. There's some kind of like only in golf kind of magical analysis of like winning and then winning again at the Open that's kind of gone on over the last couple of days. So.
Adam, I saw a great story from a journalist by the name of you
on
the PGA
Stanley?
Championship website that Rory was the last guy to win before a major, doing so in 2014, winning before.
Stanley's like, I read somewhere.
Yeah.
It was my own work.
Yeah. Buddy, I got to plug you. It was good. It's amazing how often it comes back to him in the game, though, right? Like, the twists and turns, everything is taken. And I was sitting here hoping it was going to be some Tiger stat or whatever. And no, of course, it's Rory to make the narratives even more fun heading into this week.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of that's the unique thing about sort of the British Open as a whole is because now that it's the last men's major of the year and it's such a unique major to begin with. I mean, it's links golf, you know, it's coffee golf. It's, you know, there's half the field is guys that we've never heard of. And that makes for an obviously very unique kind of Thursday, Friday situation that unfolds. But then you've got basically all of the best players in the world have a larger body of work on their year that was coming into this major. So you can kind of pick and choose who's going to be in the mix and who isn't. Like, take Scottie Scheffler, for example. That guy hasn't finished outside the top 12 on the PGA Tour since October. And it's just like, okay, fine.
And hasn't made one putt. It's remarkable.
Hasn't made a putt. Like, the number crunching of the ball striking for this guy and just how far down the graphical spectrum he is as compared to everyone else, like, is totally and utterly absurd. And yet the guy, you know, putts like I do. It's crazy.
I'm going to ask this a lot this week when we're teeing up the Open, but like, are you a Lynx golfer? Do you like Lynx golf?
Yeah. So I've played in Northern Ireland twice before. So I've been there and kind of done that. I haven't really expanded my golfing horizons, but I do think that the creativity and the uniqueness and the fun factor is unlike kind of anything else that we obviously get over here. So because it is that exciting, I'm all in on links golf for sure. You a links golf?
No. I hate it. I hate links golf.
I wouldn't want to play links golf every day for the rest of my life, but if you told me I'm going on a buddy's trip, I definitely want one of them to be a linksy style course. Like, I'm there with you. It's just a completely different game. The types of shots you try. And like, we don't have this over here, but every week when these guys go over to Scotland and you see them, you know, hitting bump and runs off of walls, back onto greens, it's just a thing in the game we don't get. So I wouldn't want it all the time, but I'm very much here for it.
Yeah, quickly, like, you think about Rory's, like, that iconic 2-iron that he hit yesterday from 206 into the breeze, flighted, curving, 215 feet, whatever it is. Like, that's sick. We don't get that here, but we get that every once in a while when they go play links golf and they kind of have this Great Britain swing, whatever you want to call it. And yeah, that's really, really cool. I will say, and I will admit that, yes, getting the bad bumps, getting the bad breaks, like thinking that you hit a good shot and then only to have it end up being really, really bad would kind of get annoying after a while if you did it every time. But it's obviously super fun to do in a handful of ways for sure.
Well, I think, you know, I played Cabot Links this summer. Not a big deal. I played Cabot Links this summer. It was like 60 kilometer winds. It was raining sideways for half of it. And I started out by hitting like an 8-iron from 150. And by the end of the day, I was like, I think I'm going to hit my 5-wood here. It's a completely different sport. Like, I don't I like playing my parkland style golf courses. I think, you know, I like a good city course. I like a big, like, I don't know. There's something about it. It doesn't play well on TV to me either, Adam. Like, I know this is sacrilegious, but every time I watch, like last year, I'm watching the 150th Open at St. Andrews. And I'm like, they're like, oh, the majesty of this hole. And I'm like, just kind of looks like flat with a lot of sand traps and some burnt out grass. It's like the one thing. It's like, oh, the hotel. Yeah, I know hotel. It doesn't play for me. It doesn't translate to TV for
me. He is not pulling a Yasser. This is not going to get him the R&M membership, I don't think.
Oh, my gosh. He's not going to be joining the honorable company of Edinburgh golfers anytime soon.
No, absolutely not.
But I will, following up on your point, there's always this conversation about the Open Championship rota of golf courses, but like, to be frank, amongst friends here, I think the road hole is like the only identifiable hole out of the six or seven rota golf courses that I could like pick out. If you gave me 18 holes, Google images of just like random selection of open rota golf course holes, and one of them was not the road hole, I would probably go 0 for 18.
Yeah.
I couldn't name what they were.
Agreed.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, right? Like, there's the postage stamp at Troon, I guess.
I wouldn't have known which course. But I know there's a postage stamp. I was like, that was the only one I know.
And do you know why I know it? Because they have a replica at, what is it, Eagle's Nest?
Yeah.
One of the par threes up there. Yeah. So
I wouldn't fit.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so Rory, not only is he coming off a win, but he was the guy who won the major here last time. Also, just as an aside, I just pulled that up to look at it. The winner this week is going to get $3.6 million. Rory didn't even get $1 million when he won in 2014. So, yes, the tide is certainly...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't exactly crying poverty. It was literally 25 grand under $1 million. But still, nuts to see that the prizes basically got up three times, nearly four. Does it mean anything? Does it just add more pressure? The fact that Rory was the last guy to win here the last time we saw a men's major in 2014, do you think it changes anything one way or another for him? Or it's just, we're back to another major and it's back to Rory being Rory.
And I think it's a bit of both. Like, that's such a cop-out answer. But I mean, like, Rory just kind of keeps showing that no matter what golf course it is, no matter what stage he's on, no matter what part of his season we find ourselves in, like, he has all the tools to compete and contend and win majors. So I think that's why, as fans of the game, as fans of Rory, as just people who want to see greatness, it's like so much more frustrating when he hasn't won a major in almost a decade, because you just think, like, law of averages. It's kind of like the Maple Leafs finally winning a first round series, you know? It's like they keep putting themselves in there and they finally did it, and it's almost because it's just like by pure numbers, eventually you got to do it. So I do think that, like, with Rory and majors, it's a little bit of the same thing. Now there are, you know, 155 guys he has to beat versus, you know, the Leafs just having to beat one team to get be out of the first round. But the point still stands. Like, the guy is so good and has been so good for so long, and the signs are all pointing to him having a chance to win again, that you break down the numbers, you kind of find the law of averages, and you think, yeah, he should be able to win one of these things sometime soon. Now his competition hasn't gotten any lighter. We talked about Scheffler already. John Rahm's got four wins, including a major already. You got Cam Smith coming in as the defending champion off a bit of a live heater. Brooks obviously is a major champ as well. Bryson's been playing really good golf so far this year. You go up down the list, whether you want to look at the live guys or you want to look at the top 10 guys in the world. And then you've got guys like Bob McIntyre, who kind of came out of nowhere, but still has all the tools to win in Europe. And you just think, like, yeah, okay, Rory could do it, but here's my dozen other guys that could probably do it as well.
I have to ask you about a guy who is not a professional golfer, but did some things yesterday. Steph Curry. I have to be honest, like, I'm not being like, ah, this is amazing. It just makes me sour, to be honest. Like,
I got so mad when I saw him running around, and I don't even have this take. It's like, enjoy your hole in one. But for him specifically, I'm like, oh, you have to make it all about you making a hole in one. How dare you make that about yourself? I'm the exact same, McKee.
Well, I was not even about the celebration.
Oh,
it's just the fact that he's so good. The fact that he's so good. It upsets. It's like, man, like, do you have to be this good? Did he hit an eagle for the win?
He did.
Like,
it's like,
yeah. Walk-off eagle.
It's just unfair, Adam. Like, so some guys can have it all? Like, just be good at basketball. Why do you have to be that good at golf? He is so good. I was watching the highlights of him. He almost jarred one from the fairway earlier in that round, too. Like, why is he so good? Are you not? Get in the gym, Steph. Stop playing golf, man.
It is pretty mind-boggling that a professional athlete being good at golf is not all that shocking, but a professional athlete being as good,
that good.
At golf in season, I think that's the thing, right? Like, we look at Marty Fish, who played tennis at a super high level. We look at, Tom Glavine and Greg Maddux and John Smoltz and all these guys who are long retired and who are, you know, just playing golf. And yeah, it makes sense that a professional athlete with a weight transfer like motion would be pretty good at golf if that's all that you're doing. But Steph Curry, like, didn't he just win the MVP like two years ago? Like, didn't the Golden State Warriors like just win the NBA championship?
Yeah, like literally last year.
And yet, okay, fine. Like, the second that the buzzer drops, you're going to go off and like have your boot camp with Butch Harmon and then go on this like crazy heater of golf. So yeah, it is pretty wild that he is so good, given the fact that he is still like also one of the maybe top five best basketball players on the planet as well. The cool thing, just to kind of digress from how upset we all are that someone can have it all, the inspiration that I think Steph Curry will have on golf from a global stage is actually like incredibly important. Somebody tweeted yesterday, like, is Rory's win bigger for golf or is Steph Curry's win bigger for golf? And you think about, like,
oh my god,
like, I'm here for the steak. I love it.
Conceptually it makes sense that like Rory's win would be bigger for golf, but like, think about what Steph Curry's actually doing to like grow the game with his foundation and with his like inspiration for just all golfers from all walks of life, and just what he's doing with the inner city kids and with all these people that maybe not have ever had access to golf. For them to like see him play as good as he did and have a hole in one and win in the manner in which he did, like, I bet you his highlight is probably leading, you know, the ESPN and leading all the sports shows on the golf segment.
100%.
And Rory's may not.
100%.
So you think,
that's correct.
I don't think that Steph Curry's win is more inspirational than Rory's, but I do think that like it holds a little bit more water for the game of golf globally.
I've had this idea, and I don't know if it would work. It can't really work because different sports have different off seasons. But my idea is that each sport sends their best. Maybe there's a tournament where it's like where you like come together and you have to have like the 16 best golfers in the NHL play a tournament to be the best NHLer. The 16 best golfers in the NBA come together to play, and then they have to play against each other to determine who's the best golfer from the best sport. So you have the NFL guys, you have the NBA guys, you have the MLB guys, the NHL guys, and you do like a tournament amongst sports is my dream outcome, because I think it's so fascinating to know which sport has the best players. You're immediately going to say hockey because the offseason's so natural, but there's Steph Curry in there. The NFL, it's the offseason's good too.
Mahomes and McKelsey are nasty.
I just think there'd be such a fascinating thing to see who's the best golfer inside all sports. But baseball throws a wrench into it because it's tough to be like, hey, I'm going to go play.
No, it's just, guys, it's just, we just have it be starting pitchers. They got lots of off days. We can make it work, honestly.
Or during the all-star break.
Okay, now we're talking.
Yeah.
You know what? No more home run derby. Just a skins game. We all love the match so much.
Yeah, exactly. Here's 18 holes in the city in which the All-Star game is being played. But I do like that, and I think that kind of just like transcends people who are sports fans. We are so fascinated at seeing, you know, it's why everyone's so obsessed with Dustin Johnson dunking a basketball. It's because it's like, whoa,
the cross-sport thing is sick.
You're not supposed to do that.
Yes.
So yeah.
We need a two-sport athlete.
We do. We got one, DJ, and Gary Woodland, former hoops player as well. Just ask him. Stanley, thank you so much for jumping on. You saved our bacon. Danielle threw out the bat signal, and you answered.
Thanks
so much, man.
No worries. I was talking to Nick Taylor this morning on the phone already.
Oh,
shocker.
From the UK. So
would you like me to pick up that name you dropped, Mr. Stanley?
Yeah, well, I dropped it at the beginning, and I've dropped it here at the end just for
great bookend.
Hits in the morning.
Very
done.
Love you, bud.
Right, nice.
Well,
there
have
he
a
goes.
Good one.
Back to dadding. Adam Stanley, love getting him on there.
I love that, man.
I have been, agreed, just want to say, I co-sign that always. I have pitched this idea, not like formally, but two bosses walking around Sportsnet of why on earth does the NHLPA not have a televised golf special?
Like, with
it
NHL?
It doesn't need to be live. Why does it have to be live? You couldn't package together a 2-hour tournament video. Like, they do it today. Well, and I mean, by Wednesday,
there's a million. Just get the producers a good or get the producers of all those things together. It'd be easy to do. And you'd be like, you think these NHL guys wouldn't want to go play at a sick course and show off?
Well, the problem with it is, and it's not a problem, it just goes other way. It's like they want to be able to be them. And it's a little hard to have guys, as we've seen with All-Star break stuff, it's like, be loose, but not too loose. Don't act like you're around your friends. And that's why, like, you know, the Sandbagger stuff Barstool does and all that kind of takes off the way it does. But yeah, I've long wanted an NHLPA golf tournament. The idea of Clayton Keller, because he is the guy who has to be the best.
Yeah, I'm sure there are. In Arizona,
exactly. Yeah. He plays for a terrible team. He's a good player.
He plays with Rahm a lot, eh?
Apparently.
Yeah.
I know. Well, there's the famous clip of him and Doughty negotiating strokes at a faceoff, Keller and Doughty.
Yeah, I love that.
He's like, what are you? Oh, you're playing. Oh, no, you got to give me 3 aside. Yeah, it was great. Thoroughly enjoyed that. Love getting Stanley on as well. Open championship.
So what was the tournament Stanley was in that Steph was in?
Because so it's just like they do it every year. Yeah, they do it every year at Lake Tahoe. Okay. It's a big celebrity tournament, and it's basically a net. Like Steph Curry didn't win just because he's the best golfer. I think if you just had a stroke play tournament with no handicaps involved, he'd probably win that too. But my understanding is he won like the net competition. Mm-hmm. So even somebody in there who's a 15 or whatever won the whole thing.
Okay, so
Travis Kelce won the long drive.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me. He was playing, I think, with Joe Pavelski.
Nice.
So if we get our producer on the horn there, maybe dig up Joel Pavelski at some point this week and talk to him about, because he was there when he made the hole in one.
Oh.
That's who he was playing with when he made the hole in one, was Joel Pavelski, I think.
Yeah, so I will admit, the second I saw that, and Steph Curry just, he's a confusing one for me because I've gone back and forth. Like, I was in college watching March Madness with my college house when he was doing Steph Curry things at Davidson. Mm-hmm. There's never been a guy I've loved more. Mm-hmm. Then he comes into the league, and then all of a sudden it's just him and LeBron, and you know me and my LeBron.
Yeah, the corn king.
Yeah, exactly. He is. I'm not even knocking it.
Thankful for you, I'm not retired. Shut up. Jeez.
Thankful
good
for
God.
Me. That was just for me. I know.
Oh, it's so tough. Embarrassing.
It's tough. I'm not going to defend it.
Oh, my God.
Always loved watching him beat Steph Curry the few times it would happen. But now it's like I had a bit of a go back around the other way on Steph. I know. And then now I'm back to kind of, you stand over there. I don't need you so much shimmy shaking in my life.
I hated him like every member of the Warriors during the Durant time.
Right.
The fact that
it's all Kevin Durant's fault.
The fact that they let that, they wanted it to happen. That it was not going to happen if they don't co-sign.
Of course.
I hated them during that stretch. There's no team I cheered against more because I just thought they just completely sullied the balance of the league. Like, it wasn't even fair. They ruined basketball for 2 years.
Agreed.
And I give Kevin Durant exactly zero credit, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Because he outdueled LeBron in 2 finals.
Yep.
Like, he was way better.
Best
no question.
1,000%.
And I give him zero credit.
Does not matter.
It's so crazy. And I...
Well, that's because you're a bad guy because you cheered when he ruptured his Achilles.
Yeah, guess what?
Guess what? Go Raps.
Me and the rest of the people at the bar erupted like we won the championship.
Because guess what?
They did.
Because we did. Yeah.
And then after, like, I really, really enjoyed last year's run.
Yep.
I rooted for them all the way through. Mm-hmm. When they beat the Celtics, when that whole run, I really loved them. And this year, you know, I always root for LeBron because you root for greatness and you want the guy to get another one. But off the court, he's not my favorite guy. But it's just so corny. Trust me.
Yeah, he is.
But I think Steph Curry's had a fascinating career. The golf stuff to me, I like this one because it's playing against celebs.
Yeah.
But when he went to like the Corn Ferry thing.
Yeah. You didn't like that?
I was like, what are you doing, dude? These guys are grinding for their card.
You
make $35 million a year. Just play at your home course, pal.
I've gone back and forth on that one. I mostly side with you of whatever the game gets from Steph Curry, it is not worth what that one guy loses because he's grinding for his card and can't get in.
It's the I mean, and there's tons of people that would be on this other side of this.
Yeah.
But for me, like the perception
I'm
of
not,
it,
I'm not,
you're trying to take like 10K out of these guys' pockets. Exactly. Like, give me a break.
Now, I mean,
Did he come dead last?
I don't know that he came dead last.
He was close.
It was not
last.
Good. It was not good. Guess what? Professional golf's hard. We've seen this before with Tony Romo, right? We know how this movie goes. The one thing about Steph that will always hammer home, and I'm sure you've seen this before, his bona fides as a golf guy is in the NBA finals, him walking into Dick's or whatever store it is in the States, getting his clubs regripped, like just walking in full set of irons, full bag, but no bag. Cause that's how it works. When you drop it off, don't bring your bag in here, plop the irons down. The only way I guess it could be more of a golf guy is if he did it himself. Yeah. The idea of him just having a little spot in the Warriors training room to do his grips. I would like to see that. I also, going to save it for a little later on in this hour. I did have a guy who I had a moment that sucked me in. I didn't get sucked in by Phil or any of these other ones, but there was one that shocked me.
Should we chew on something?
We will. That's exactly what I was getting ready to do. It is now time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
I put Juneau here. Do you have something else you would like
to talk about it?
Tanner Juneau. Apparently this one fits under the cap. Everything that I was told was that they had no money left. And
as a man whose team is $8 million over the cap at this moment, I will not
say
bad words.
Okay. So Tanner Janot, 2x2.65. We know a couple things about him. He is strong as an ox. Mm-hmm. He's a big boy from Estevan, Saskatchewan. Mm-hmm. And we know that he had 4 points in 23 games, including the playoffs, since the trade.
Good contract.
Yeah,
no problems with it. Tough. He can refine a bit of his scoring touch. He's never doing what he did that one year.
Yeah. So he had 24 goals in the first full season. If you add the Lightning time to the Predators time, he had 6 last year. If he's in the middle, I think you really like that contract. It's not going to kill you. No. He's a guy who can give you other things. Oh, yeah. But as we've seen with the Leafs, when you pay a guy, when you're a team that kind of structures things this way, and every decent team in the NHL is structured this way now, that's the first guy you point to when the big boys dry up are going, need a little more. Mm-hmm. You do need a little more from you. Now, again, I'm not poo-pooing the deal. I know a lot. You and I were both, when they traded the whole world for him at the deadline, terrified.
Oh, that he was going to be good.
Yeah, I would not do
Luke
that.
Luke Shen broke him.
Yeah, Luke Shen did break him.
Shen beat the brakes off of him, and he was never the same.
You want to give me a little LT in person? I've never seen it.
Luke Troops
in person.
He missed a couple games. He was scratched after that. Yep. Yeah, like that was a turning point in the whole series.
Don't sit in the truck.
He sat him down, and that was two big Saskatchewan sports just chucking. That looked like an AJHL fight.
I would like a statue of that fight just in their hometowns.
NFT of that fight.
I would. Yeah, are we doing
NFT
that? Let me tell you, I feel like we could get a sick deal on some NFTs that were once quite pricey. I would take an NFT of that fight, or even a fungible token, one in real life of just those two farm boys chucking them.
But yeah, I don't think that's going to hurt them.
No,
I think he is a valuable guy for them in terms of just having
a
tough guy.
Big body.
Yeah, he can score. You put him in you can play in a third line role, maybe play up the lineup a little bit. And my biggest takeaway is I cannot wait for the Ryan Reeves Tanner Janot fight.
Yeah,
it's gonna be really good.
It's gonna be fun. Yep. Will he do better than Luke Shen? Hard to do better.
I mean, I don't know. In that fight, I've watched that fight so many times that I have like a detailed breakdown of it.
It's great.
But there's no man outside of Tanner Janot that's surviving the first left that Luke Shen lands.
He dummies it.
He comes out from he comes out of the grip and just right on the button. And I was like, oh, that's it. They're going to chuck 7 more bombs each.
It is so and people know Shen. It's not a thing. But remembering a guy back on your team, I watched one Luke Shen fight, and then every fight afterwards, I'm just sitting there going, oh, I hope this guy doesn't know he's lefty.
Oh, yeah,
it's all true. You want. You just wanted to get that left loose and start chucking. And he did. Yeah. And he did. The Reeves-Janot fight, going to be awesome. Ryan Reeves, maybe the most polarizing Leaf in the world coming up, because there are going to be 6-7 nights a year where you go, yes, give him $10 million. Not enough. But the other ones are going to be a little touch and go. We got some winners and losers to give you from the weekend. Going to conjure up some. And for all you on the text line, it involves more golf. So you're going to be fired up. But it also involves the Blue Jays. So you should be. We got an hour and a half left. Jeff Blair going to join us. Big 8 o'clock hour. Jeff Blair going to join us then. And we'll also talk to Obi, Shane O'Brien of the Missing Curfew podcast. He was throwing out the first pitch at the Jays game. I don't know. We'll ask him how that went. We'll ask him about everything going on in the NHL's offseason and if somebody could literally do anything. Fan Morning Show here, Gunning and McKee on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show. Brent Gunning, Sam McKee here. Going to give you some winners and losers. But before that, we were talking a little earlier about guys who we turned on, guys who we felt we would cheer one way for watching. Now, this is more individual sports that hit so much better for, but I had a team athlete one. This is the guy I won't say I hate the most, because I don't even, like, I just think he's overrated, and it causes me to dislike him. And that gentleman is the guy who wore two for the New York Yankees for a long time, and Derek Jeter was not a big Jeets guy growing up for me.
Yeah, sorry, how could you be?
Sorry choking you up there, I know.
How could you be?
Couldn't stand him. But now part of this was just happenstance. I had the game on because he was surrounding 3,000. It's a big moment in baseball. I did kind of want to see it. I had the game on, but I was barbecuing. I didn't care. You know, if I miss it, great. If I see it, great. And I walked right back in just to see, the pitch and whatever it was, whoever was on the call. And it is a bomb to dead center field. And even me, in my cold, blackened heart with hatred for the New York Yankees, I went, God, it's an awesome moment for the captain. Even I turned watching that one. So that is the only one I can think of that jumps at the very top of my head. I was happy for Jeets when he got hit 3,000. But even then, I wasn't like, go Yankees, go Jeter. I was more happy, go Brent, that I saw the moment. So even then, I'm realizing it wasn't. And
so you're just happy for yourself.
I was really just happy for myself. Oh, okay. But Derek Jeter was allowed to be a part of it, which is more than I would have ever said at any other point in my life. And another one, I don't know that it quite fits, but I definitely changed how I felt watching it and then felt dirty afterwards for how I felt early on. The Hideki Masters. Definitely was just cheering for him to choke like a dog, bring somebody back into it.
He almost did.
He almost did.
But Xander went in the water on 16.
And he choked like a dog.
I didn't even know there was water on 16.
and then we got the all-time shot of his caddy bowing, and we got the all-time Masters champion dinner of the incredible sushi that he served up this year. So yeah, those are the two that jumped out for me. If you got any of your own guys you've completely done a flip on, somebody you just changed while watching, 590 590. Winners and losers from the weekend. I have a few of each. Okay. Would you like me to begin?
Yeah, go ahead.
The winners and losers for this weekend. Biggest winner: guys who did not step on the field, and it's Atkins and Shapiro. I kind of laid this out at the beginning. The idea that the series started potentially with Gabriel Moreno hitting a go-ahead game-winning homer in the seventh inning. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. just ripping seeds all across the diamond. Tremendous defensive plays. And Dalton Varsho having a weekend, you know, as he typically does. It was all right there narrative-wise for those two to be eating it front and center. But team took care of business, sweep away the weekend. They're in a great spot. Who cares what those guys on the Diamondbacks did, because your guys took care of business. So maybe it's more not losers than true winners, but my number one winner from the weekend, Atkins and Shapiro.
It's a good one.
You like that?
I do. It's a zag. Not a zag. It's outside the box.
Okay.
It's outside the box. It's not your traditional winner and loser. I will say, for my first winner,
yep,
going back to the well here, tennis fans. Tennis fans really had a moment this weekend. It was,
Jack, he was fired up.
The Wimbledon final is always a big moment.
It is.
But it felt like this was a real passing of the torch moment for Alcaraz to beat Joker in Wimbledon, where has he won five in a row before this? Five or six in a row, he wins every single year.
That I can confirm.
To have the young, hot prospect who's, ripping it up, number one player in the world at 20, for him to actually go down there and stare. And he's barely played. Like, they were talking about it during the broadcast. Like, he's barely played on grass.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, he won at Queens, which I found out was a thing.
Yeah, it's a big thing. I know that.
Oh, Queens. What's Queens? And I Googled it. It's like another.
Yeah. It's like the Scottish Open of grass.
Yeah, basically. So, big winner this weekend. is tennis fans. Your sport was in the crosshairs of all sports fans. People were watching. The non-tennis people on my Twitter, I didn't send one tennis tweet because no one cares about my tennis thoughts.
I'm good. But I don't even really want them now.
But the non-tennis people in my Twitter, I was getting texts like in the group chat. Boys were talking tennis. Like, it was a big weekend for tennis fans. So congrats to you guys. I mean, cared about your sport for 4 hours.
I know part of it is free money, but even I had a little action on the Wimbledon final there. Just give me free money because each of these guys are going to win.
When I did look, when Joker was, I think he was down a break in the fourth set, I looked at it and it was 4-1.
Wow.
And I was like,
you thought.
I thought about a little, if I had a little bit of cash in my account, I haven't gambled since Leafs playoffs basically. So I took out all my cash. Mm. So I didn't have any in the account, but if I had even a little bit, I probably would have put 4-1.
And then
by the end of that, he was a favorite going into the fifth set. So.
There you go. In terms of the one last question for you, resident tennis expert.
Oh, yes, thanks.
Does he need a guy like Djokovic? I'm not going to, and I know you're not going to either, but Djokovic is around for a while, but you know, I don't think he's going to be around for a decade here. Does he need a foil, or is it good enough if he becomes, and I know these are the loftiest praise I can heap on him, the Tiger Woods of tennis, where he just beats the wheels off these guys and there's no challenger. Well, like, is that good? Would that be compelling to you, or does he need a rival?
There's a few young guys coming up. There's a guy, some Casper guy, I think.
Casper Ruud.
Yeah, yeah.
I've heard of him.
He's a good player, apparently.
I like to call him a Ruud boy.
Told me he's pretty good. I think Felix, if I'm wrong.
I will not be getting excited about this until somebody tells me I actually need to.
I think he has a good record head-to-head against Alcaraz. Like, I think he... Didn't he beat him in the former Davis Cup? Like, he's had some moments against him.
Hold on. It's not called the Davis Cup anymore?
I don't know. I'm looking behind the glass. When you guys know what it's called?
Nobody paying attention to us. They're deep in a junior hockey conversation.
Daniela, you know everything about every sport. What's the name of the Davis Cup now? I feel like it changed.
I think it's still the Davis Cup.
But he beat him at the Davis Cup, I'm pretty sure, right? Is that the international one?
Yes, that is in fact the international one.
Enough tennis because I don't know enough. Okay. Continue. You're your next winner.
All right, my next winner. Sticking with the Blue Jays. Mm. Another unconventional one.
Oh, boy.
Alek Manoah. The more these starters perform well, the more the pressure is off him to be a part of the rotation. And again, Gausman didn't start this weekend. That can have a big, big change one way or another. But so long as Bassett keeps giving you what he's giving you, Barrios keeps giving you what he's giving you, you do not need Alek Manoah to come in here and save the rotation. And as much as he is probably telling himself, I need to come in and be the ace because that's how he's wired and all of that, it is absolutely set up the best possible for this team if he doesn't need to be that guy. And the fact that those two guys go out and do what they do this weekend, even Kikuchi, not a terrible outing from him by any means, it allows you to just take the pressure off. And if Manoah can just slowly build to be part of it, much better set up than if he needs to come back and save everything like it felt like he was going to have to at one point in time.
Okay, I like that. I think it is not a ton of pressure on him right now. Because
gotta
like you
keep
said,
it that way.
Yeah, I don't. I'm different about this than you are. Like, I just kind of feel confident in him.
Okay.
I
don't feel unconfident in him. I would just like it to be as smooth sailing as possible. That's why I keep going back to pressure thing.
But yeah, I you know, pressure, what's the saying? Pressure is something they put in
pressure.
Tires.
Oh.
Yeah, remember that? When he said that before the wild card game and he got lit up.
How'd that go? Yeah, maybe
he was actually good after that first inning,
just
but
don't get back court.
He wasn't good. That just wasn't good that happened to him. But no, I'm weirdly confident in Manoah, and I'm like not too worried. And guess what? If he's bad, he's bad.
Yep.
And he's just
Ryu
and he's not gonna be I feel like he's gonna have a short leash. We talked about this last week, but I feel like he's gonna have a short leash, one or two bad ones again, and he might be gone for a while.
Yep. Kevin Gausman will have something to say about this whenever we get an update on him. You got any other winners for me?
Can we go back and forth?
Sure.
Loser.
Okay.
Hopkins.
Hmm.
Why did DeAndre Hopkins sign with the Titans?
It is
the most money, I guess.
I do like money.
Fantasy football owners everywhere cringed at this. It's just like, I mean, his quarterback is still Ryan Tannehill, correct?
They had the rookie they liked in there,
Will Levis. Yeah. Will Levis, they just drafted, but like to
and Malik
me,
Wills. Yeah.
I guess you're going there with the kind of. It's crazy to say this, but the Titans are almost like a. Not pedigree is the wrong word, but
no,
like,
they are.
They're just the coaching there. It's really solid. They always
Vrabel seems to be contending
or whatever. Maybe he's going to
horse and Henry
go be the number one option or whatever there. But to me, it's just a weird. It's a weird place to sign for a guy that's. I wouldn't say he's getting close to done, but he's definitely past his prime for sure. And it just seems like he struck me as the type of guy that would be going to play for a real, real contender. And I'm just surprised to see him go sign there. Like Tannehill's not a great QB. They got the Will Levis is their backup kid they just drafted. I'm not a huge fan of him signing there.
Yeah, I don't see the obvious fit for him other than, like you said, it's probably the most guaranteed money. I know the Patriots were kicking tires. The Bills were kicking a lot of tires. I think part of it is that you want to be, if you're him, the lead option as a receiver. You know, you come to Buffalo. That was obviously another team that was really, really hot after him. Stephon Diggs is complaining all the time about not getting the ball. And I actually not bothered by that.
Hopkins is far and away the number one option in fantasy now. So I guess that just tells you.
That's it. Yeah. New England was after him. He would have been a number one option there as well. And, you know, I'm not going to tell you feel much better about it, but Mac Jones has at least proved to be a semi-competent quarterback.
But I think Tannehill is probably a better QB than... Like a more proven QB than Matt Jones.
It's the Titans offense. I don't even look at it as who the quarterback is. It's just they run, and then you are going to inevitably face softer coverage because of how many guys you have to jam in the box because of Henry. So yeah. I can see it from that perspective, but again, I don't see the long-term roadmap here. But good for him that he gets back. Obviously, he was with a pretty talented guy in Kyler and never really, you know, I won't say never clicked, but didn't have the success they wanted as a team there. I'm going to give you a winner.
Okay. I got another loser for you after.
Okay.
I went negative.
You went negative.
Yeah.
Well, this is a winner and a loser.
Okay.
Winner, me and all my Rory stands, we watched Rory win. We just talked about it with Adam Stanley. Loser, me and all my Rory stands, we couldn't watch Rory win. Golf fans everywhere. We do this all the time. Normally, it's because a college basketball game has to finish up. I don't know why they can't just.
I feel like they've gotten better. They have the window.
They've gotten a lot better.
They have.
But that was the gripe forever.
It was.
And yesterday
was the coverage gap. What was it called?
It was the coverage gap.
Oh my god!
They go. We now are going to stop showing golf for even though it's 15 minutes to 3 o'clock.
Danielle is just so sour. He's like, we need to see Eastern Kentucky.
St. John must foul. They have. To shoot.
They're down 12. Keep fouling, guys.
Keep fouling, boys. You're going to get it. Play tight D. Come on. But Rory McIlroy, we just talked about it. One of the finish for the ages. I'm sure you've seen the clip floating around on social. If you haven't, go find it. This slingy 2-iron he throws in there, puts it to 10 feet, makes the putt. Awesome moment for him. Only available to be watched on an app.
It's absurd.
It's absurd.
The year is 2023. Park.
I would like to watch it on my television.
Yes.
That's what I would like to do. I even tried to put said app on my smart television. No, it never works. It's never, honestly, other than Sportsnet.
It's always granulated. Yeah. Or it's never right.
No, you definitely don't want that.
No.
So winners, everybody who got to experience in whatever way you experienced it, that incredible finish for Rory McIlroy. Losers, everybody who experienced it by not rotting in their butt groove on their couch getting to watch it. A pain. We got to fix it. We got to.
My next loser is a golf as well.
Mm.
I would like to read you Scottie Scheffler's tee to green rankings in his last 11 events that he has one victory in.
Please.
Bay Hill, second. Players, first. You won players, right? Who didn't? I can't remember which one of these.
I don't think you did win the players.
Masters, second. Heritage, fifth. Byron Nelson, second. PGA, first. Colonial, first. U.S. Open, third. Travelers, second. Scottish Open, second. That's the tee to green rankings for Scottie Scheffler, and he has one win.
That's gotta insane. Hit a putt. You have to hit one putt.
It's hard to say.
He did win the players this year. Sorry.
A guy that is won so much money and is in top five and top tens in every.
Yep.
He should have five wins. He should have four wins. Like this is Tiger-esque.
It is.
This is absurd how good his putting, how good his tee to green is, how bad his putting is. It is crazy. So a man who is very rich and in the top five of every PGA Tour event is a loser. That's a loser.
Yep. I'm going to go back to the game of golf for my winners. And it is exactly that. The game of golf. We just went over it with Stanley. It's an awesome place. We say this heading into every single major.
Steph Curry.
No. Okay. Pulling back the curtain. Our studio is on the second floor overlooking... I suppose design-wise, it would technically be called a courtyard, but really it's just the entrance to our building. Mm-hmm. I wondered what would happen if I would have hurled myself just through the studio glass.
You'd survive.
I would survive. I would actually, I think the glass would do way more damage than the fall would there. I contemplated it when I heard, was Steph Curry's win bigger for the game of golf?
It's hard to disagree.
He's not wrong. Yes. I just hate it. So yes, that was my other winner there. I just realized the only loser I had from, one more loser. Hockey fans everywhere. I need a nibble.
Oh my God.
I need it. I need something. Give me a hook. I know we got a Janot signing. We knew that was going to happen. Mm. Now I should be careful what I wish for, because I believe the second guy up for arbitration is Leafs goaltender Ilya Samsonov. So not him.
That's happening soon, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. 4 days.
Oh my God. Why not today?
I would take, this arbitration hearing got really testy between team and player, and they reached a deal, and who cares? I would even just take that. I need some scintilla of news. It is the Sahara Desert out there, well, as far as hockey news is concerned.
I mean, we're on again next week, but we're 12-3 yeah. next week, right? So can we get something for this week? Like, can we get, like, Wednesday, Nylander report? Can we get a Matthews report?
I'd very much like a report.
It is so incredibly quiet.
And eerie. Like,
usually, I think you could read this one of two ways. Either they're somewhat close on something.
I love the Kipper theory because I want it to be true that the Matthews deal's done and they're just waiting to grind Nylander to dust until they announce it.
He also said
the exact opposite.
He's like, yeah. The other theory is that they're way off. I'm like, oh my God, Kipper.
Well, come on. Give us the good one.
Which is it? So I'm like you. I would die for any piece of hockey news. Mm-hmm. I'd love to talk hockey in July, but it's always kind of like this.
It is. No, and
there's a flurry of news for the first 2 weeks. There's a reason Real Kipper and Bourne is off the air.
There is.
It would be a little dry right now.
Yeah, and the thing with the Matthews news is that this is the great unknown, right? We have to get familiar with this uncomfortable feeling, and I don't know that I'd feel much differently about it if, and this isn't a Kyle Dubas thing, but it's just the change that happened. I am giving Treliving more of a grace period mm-hmm. to have no news come out, because he effectively started from ground zero in terms of where they were building that relationship. Now, obviously, Shanahan would have understood the parameters that were being discussed. I don't think it was some big sea change, but I actually do feel a little bit better about it because Treliving kind of started fresh late in the game in the offseason. But yeah, I would very, very much like some awesome Matthews.
I have
news.
A quick bonus winner because I was too negative before. Whit Merrifield.
Two-hit whip?
Just a winner. Right now, he is red hot. I've always liked this guy. I really liked the trade when they made it for him. He's a guy that came in here as kind of a, they were like, oh, he's going to be a spare part guy where he's going to be, he was an off-the-bench guy.
False.
And then I think his play for the start of his Blue Jays tenure, where he wasn't playing every day, kind of reflected that he was not used to this kind of role.
Exactly.
But you get him in the lineup, this man hits. Mm-hmm. And over the weekend, he was excellent. He had one play in left field where he bonked it off his glove, made a good attempt at it. It was a hard play. He plays a solid left field. He can play the infield. In his last 27 at-bats, he's got 11 hits, 9 runs, 4 home runs, 10 RBIs, 1 strikeout in his last 27, .407 average, an .852 slug. He is smoking hot right now, and he's a guy I'd like to see get into the lineup a little bit higher. Maybe a guy that you can DH instead of Kirk, who can't hit. I'm really, really impressed with Whit Merrifield, and this is basically a victory lap for me because I love the trade, and I've loved him his whole time here. Me and the boys were yelling, oh, he's a ball player, Whit. And he did the interview after. He's just a ball player. So big fan of Whit Merrifield. Had an excellent weekend, and he's been a great player for the Jays this year.
I have to get out of my, I wasn't even alive then, but my 1984 thinking. Because the second you said DH Whit Merrifield, and you're not wrong, I went, ugh. D.H. Kirk, that's a power hitter spot. You got to get somebody with some real pop in the bat, but you don't.
Six home runs this year.
No, I know.
I think that's three more than Kirk.
Definitely is. Yeah. I'm not knocking that at all. It is. I reflexively immediately go, ugh, guy's not a corner outfielder or first baseman. What is he doing as my team's D.H.?
And his home run was the definition of a wall scraper on Saturday. It literally hit the top of the fence and went out.
Yeah, and he's exactly the kind of guy great teams have, is that he is not the engine of your team, but he's somebody who can carry a team for a game or two.
He puts the ball in play.
Yep.
He is a fast guy who's good base runner, puts the ball
really
in play.
Really good base runner.
Gets the bat, like I said, just gets it into the field. I've been impressed with him, so.
Yep, and you love that he can give you multiple positions. Again, he's not a gold glover at any of them necessarily, but,
excellent nickname, Two Hit Wit.
Two Hit Wit is truly an excellent nickname. I don't have one for Jeff Blair. I'm just going to say Jeff Blair is going to join us next. Because if I tried to give him one, I was going to say, I bet you Daniele would be reaching for that mic again going, you guys are tap dancing. Blair said he's not coming on. But he is, because he's not listening right now. I guarantee you that. Jeff Blair going to join us next. 1 hour left from the Fan Morning Show with Gunning and McKee on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.